Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us again on The Farkas Files. Tonight I have a fascinating guest who I think we'll have many, many conversations with. Lauren Wilson, in many ways does work very similar to mine, and in our little email and Facebook conversation, it sounds like we work very similarly. So I'm really looking forward to chatting with her, finding out how she got where she is, and learning more about her work. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And what I've been thinking, well, I live in a college town. And it's not just a small college town. We have a major university that has tens of thousands of students, and then two other colleges that are smaller colleges. One's a mainline, old school kind of college, and the other one is an experimental college. And so we got lots and lots of students. And that's part of what makes the town great. It's part of what attracts incredible restaurants, good food, music, all kinds of things. And the other side of it is there's lots of students around all the time, and they are pretty self-absorbed and want to do things fast and are kind of annoyed at anybody that isn't playing into that. This weekend is graduation weekend. So being the old fuddy-duddy that I am, I'm actually really happy that I'm not going to be around, because not only will there be lots of students celebrating, which means typically getting drunk and being noisy, but also there are going to be tens of thousands of parents showing up who will be just as confused as the students are. And as I sat down to do the show, which, you know, I do from my home, I had to close all the windows to make sure that if the kids next door start, you know, cheering and doing all kinds of other things, you wouldn't hear it. And I'm musing that that's exactly how life is. Life is about beginnings and endings, and the appearance of beginnings and endings anyway, and going off in a new direction. You know, the kids are both celebrating that I finally made it through. It's over. I don't have to do this anymore. And at the same time, probably most of them, if they have any shred of consciousness left after all that, are saying, oh my God, now I have to go out and make a life for myself. And that turning point, that going off into the unknown, that starting off in a new direction, is the essence of something I talk about a lot, which is walkabout. Walkabout is a term from the Aboriginal Australian Indigenous people, talking about a rite of passage in which young people are taken to the outback by an elder, and they go off into the outback with nothing but a knife and a spear and what they've learned, basically to find themselves, to talk to spirit, to talk to nature, to test themselves. And they don't come back until it feels complete and they've got their story to tell. The issue in modern society, at least in our culture, is we don't see that we're doing that. And we're doing that all the time. Every time you start something new, every time you get into that place of, well, what do I do now? You're on walkabout. And walkabout usually, whether we consciously do it or not, involves letting go of what was there previously. So part of the ceremony of walkabout is that you give away all of the stuff, all of your belongings, so that you're leaving with nothing. And you say goodbye to everybody that's been a part of your life before that, because you don't know who you're going to be when you come back. And I know people that have done that consciously as part of their training to be whatever version of shamanic work they're going to be doing. But I also know people where it just sort of happened. They wound up with no place to live and no money, gave all their stuff away, got a beat up car, and said, okay, let's see where we're going. And somewhere along the line on the trip, they went, oh, wait a minute. And one friend of mine said she was sitting in the bathroom at somebody's house and there was a book on shamanism in the bathroom. And she opened it to the section about vision quest and walkabout. And in that moment realized she had already done all the preliminaries and she was on walkabout. So I just want to send my blessings and prayers out to all these kids that are going off on walkabout and unfortunately don't get it. They don't get that it's a spiritual quest. They don't get how powerful it is. And I hope that they can let that in. And I hope they don't do any damage over the weekend. So that's tonight's metaphysical music. And let's have a wonderful conversation with my guest tonight, Lauren Wilson. You with us, Lauren?
I am right here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thanks for being on. I'm looking forward to hearing about your work. And why don't you give our listeners a quick taste, a quick introduction to what you do?
Wow, well, that can be a loaded question.
Well, I know. I didn't say it was easy.
Well, as you know, and certainly, you know, certainly with the work that you do, it's one of those things that you tend to adapt to the situation versus have a set guideline or rule of how you actually work. My protocols tend to shift depending on who my clients are, and I like to call myself a spiritual healer. As a spiritual healer, that can run the gamut in terms of what people need. What I'm finding, though, as we come into that full realization of 2012, I am a spiritual integration coach. And what that basically means is I have a lot of clients that come to me for a variety of different reasons as a house healer, as what you do, you know, helping them figure out what's going on where they live. And then I ask them about where they live in terms of their body and their mind and their spirit. And a lot of people go, I can't believe you just asked me that. I'm having a really hard time, or I'm having very strange dreams, or how does that work? How did you know? And what it boils down to is that people need to integrate and assimilate not only within their environment and where they live, but also realizing that we live in this body and how we're dealing with all the changes and transformations that are happening all around us are also happening inside of us.
Right. There's nothing that's really outside. There's only things that appear to be outside.
Exactly.
Which, of course, is the greatest frustration, especially to those of us who should know that by now.
We've been here a while. How many times?
I often say, on a good day, I remember this more quickly than on other days.
And that, too, it's very true. It's a process of memory. And having all this stuff come back and kind of bop you in the middle of your forehead and go, yeah, you remember? You were here? Yes, I'm doing this again.
Right. And it's also, oh, I've seen this lesson before. I guess I didn't learn it because here it is again. And every time it shows up, the sound is louder and you get hit harder. I'm like, oh, come on. Could you just give me the notes or something?
Well, and you know, hearkening back to what you were just saying in your metaphysical musings, these kids who are embarking on their life path or the perception of their life path based on being at college for 4 years, it's really a fascinating thing to watch because so many of them, they're in this social free fall and they're reaching out for absolutely anything that they can grab onto that they perceive as solid and real and identify with as being acceptable. And they do tend to fall away from the spiritual aspect of realizing what's on the inside, the walkabout on the inside, in as much as it is on the outside.
Right, right. The doing it externally is what I would say forces you, but that's not the point. What gets you to the place of doing the internal work? Mm-hmm. So whether it's the story of Jesus going into the desert for 40 days or any number of other stories, it's the isolation and the challenge that gets you to the point of having to do the inner work. You're not distracted by other things. You're not looking at all the other stuff. It's right here. It's right now. And one of the things I always tell people about any shamanic work is there's only one question. The question is, what next?
Indeed, what's next?
What next? And when you get the message, you do it. And then after you do it and you've survived doing it, which you might not expect was going to happen, at least in my training, you then say, and what next? And can I take a break now?
Right. Can I opt out of the next part? No, not really.
Is there nap time somewhere in here? Yeah, I described my training as being thrown into the deep end of the swimming pool randomly without any prior notice. And my teacher is just kind of looking and going, oh, good, he's not drowning. All right, that's pretty good.
I guess you're hanging in there.
Right. You know, and you come out sputtering and exhausted with a million questions like, did you see, and was that? And one of my teachers only had one answer to any of that, which was, what's the difference?
Mm-hmm.
He just wouldn't answer because all the questions were up in my head. And the point was that I had the experience and I had to integrate that I could do it again. So you just keep getting thrown in the deep end of the pool till you realize you're not going to drown. You can do this.
I equated my early training to being shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, and that works.
And you know, realizing that you're flying through the air at 120 miles an hour and not really knowing where you're going to land, but taking in the scenery as it goes by.
Exactly. Where am I going and what am I going to land on? Because I don't want to hit something hard.
Right. Can I avoid hitting my head?
Yeah, definitely. That's one of the things that most people don't get about this kind of work. And one of the other factor is if you're really good at anything, you make it look easy. So people observe what you're doing and go, oh, well, that must have been straightforward. And it was to somebody who's been doing it for 20 or 30 years and has done it many, many times. But to anybody else, it could be life-threatening.
It's true, and that's such a great exercise to go through and realize that you do tend to fall in that place where you've taken it for granted, you take your training for granted, or you take your experience for granted, and not everyone can step in right out of the blue and assimilate everything that's happening to them without doing right. some damage psychologically or even physically. So it's important to constantly be aware and constantly checking in, especially with these people that are just going through this awakening process. And it's not right. enough to say, well, I've been there, done that, because everybody's experience is so very personal. And right. you know, they might relate something back to you that you have also experienced, and you want to be able to validate their experience and keep them from, you know, falling back into that I must be out of my mind place, saying, you know what, it's really okay. You're going to be fine. Just breathe in and out every day, and you're going to do fine.
Right. If I had a nickel for every time someone said, you're going to think I'm crazy, but, and to which my response is, no, you don't know who you're talking to.
That's right.
There is really nothing that you can come up with that I'm going to think is crazy. You know, there are so many experiences other people think are crazy that I've either experienced myself or watched people experience that it's really unlikely what you're about to tell me is going to sound crazy to me.
And on the same note, being able to allow them to have their wonder and their awe over what they've gone through and right. to be able to share that with them and not take it to a place where it's like, oh, really, is that all? Oh, let me tell you.
Well,
if that's
yeah,
all that happened, you're doing great.
Right. And, you know, and frequently people, you know, a lot of what I hear is people's experiences with paranormal phenomena. And they always freak out when I say, well, did this happen too? And they're like, how did you know that? I said, because they kind of come together. And almost always, if that happened, then this will happen.
Yeah.
Like, how do you know that? Like, that's what happens if you've done this for a while. So.
Yeah, once you start to see them, they see you back. And that's really such a huge lesson, particularly for people in the paranormal community, people that are seekers within the paranormal community, either mm-hmm. to be a practitioner in one modality or another, or even if they're just experimenting and they're going out with a paranormal group on the weekends, you know, for fun and kicks. There's so much to know, because despite all of the ramblings about the paranormal community being a very scientific community, it's ultimately a spiritual experience. It's a spiritual community. And without that piece, people tend to be so vulnerable to the energetics and the aspects of the paranormal that people don't really talk about. They put it in a category of science fiction. And right. I think that can be very, very dangerous. So many of my clients that come to me that have been in paranormal groups and have been part of things for a long time, you know, you realize that you compromise yourself. No, I didn't know that, you know?
Right. Right. I remember one of the early TV shows, there was a very cavalier comment of, I've never heard of anybody being hurt by a ghost. And I was like, oh, really?
That would be news.
then you don't have very much experience, do you? It seems to me that one of the major elements in the paranormal community and the rush to go and do investigations is creating for yourself a visceral physical experience of the paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
And so they really, on some level, want an object to move or a light to light up or to hear the sounds or to be touched or whatever it is. And a lot of the provocation stuff is really saying, okay, I'm here. Show me something. Do something to me. Convince me.
Mm-hmm.
Except when that happens, they completely freak out.
Well, and the thing is that because we're so conditioned to believe that it is so much science fiction and fantasy, that the actual experience when it does occur is it boggles the mind. They really right. just can't get over it. And you think, well, you asked for it. You wanted to get slapped about the head. Why would this shock you?
Right. I especially like when they go to the most dramatic place they can, you know, the dungeon in the psych hospital for the criminally insane, or, you know, the prison at some fortification where a major battle happened. And they do provocation, and I can't watch the shows anymore because I sit in my living room alone screaming at them. What are you doing?
you become the crazy person right then and there.
Right.
And, yelling at your TV.
My sense of the ghost experience is they still have their personality because they haven't let go of this lifetime. So on one end are the extremely timid and withdrawn, and on the other end are the really gregarious or dangerous. So if you go to a place where everybody was dangerous when they were alive, and you try and make contact with them by getting them angry, in all likelihood, you're going to meet that part of their personality.
Yeah. And you know, there's a few of them that are very good at provocation, and they've kind of cultivated that as being very edgy.
Right.
And I've actually been in communication with some of them and saying, you know, you walked out of there with a whole tribe behind you, right?
Well, the other thing,
criminally insane people.
Right. And that's the other thing that they don't realize and they don't acknowledge is protecting yourself when you go in and cleaning yourself up when you leave. And I haven't worked on people who are part of the paranormal community to clean them up, but I know other people that have. And that element of the spiritual healing aspect of it and the protection of it starts with an acknowledgement that this stuff's real, And there's an interaction here. And as soon as you go in looking for it, it will find you. And then what are you going to do?
I think that the trickiest part of working with someone who clearly has attachment issues, I mean, some of the more extreme cases that I've worked with are people that, I mean, they've gone so far as to become divorced from their families. Mm-hmm. You know, there's such a dissolution between their ownership over their own body and whatever this other attachment might happen to be. Typically, if it's a ghost attachment, it's more than one. And, yeah, you know, they all take their turn. They all take the opportunity because the person who is going into the paranormal investigation world, they don't ground themselves properly. They don't take ownership of their body. They tend to lead with their ego. And it's alarming because it's the ego that will ultimately deceive them into believing that, oh, yes, if I stand under a flickering bright light, then I won't have anything attached to me. Or if I just tell them to stay here, they won't attach to me. You know, there's no dominion when they do this. They're shooting from the hip, quite literally. And, you know, they even when they come to actually get some spiritual healing and some cleansing, the ego presents itself and says, well, I did everything right. Well, if you mm-hmm. did everything right, you wouldn't be sitting in front of me now, would you?
Exactly.
So yes, elimination of the ego could be really, really beneficial. And even the ones that, you know, claim to be coming from a very scientific perspective and, you know, we're all science, we're all proof, yabbity yabbity yabbida, they are spiritual beings. Even the ones that are scientifically minded, you're ultimately a spiritual being and you're subject to all of that realm, whether you acknowledge it or not.
Right. And I wonder how many of the people involved are asking the basic, well, underlying the paranormal investigation experience is an attempt to confirm that there's life after death, mm-hmm. that something is going on, which is one of the big questions, obviously, in life. And they really go into it as if it's, you know, I'm just going to collect stuff. Well, what do you do when you've suddenly confirmed that and you've, you know, seen somebody walk past on the infrared camera, or you've had a half-hour conversation using some device that they can make blink, whatever it happens to be that you've got in your hand. How do you integrate that? How do you deal with those spiritual and philosophical questions, which are the core of why you're doing it, other than, you know, just the adrenaline rush?
Ultimately, I think that's exactly right. They're adrenaline junkies. It's all about the experience and, you know, sort of consequences be damned after that experience. And let's go find something bigger and scarier to poke a stick with, you know.
Absolutely. Hey, I want to make sure that everybody knows how to find you. Let's give your website and any other contact information.
You can find me on Facebook. I'm Clear Light Solutions on Facebook, and I also have my website, www.clearlightsoulsolutions.com. And we're incorporating the soul into the solution, so it makes a lot of sense.
Another one of those ways that you integrate the language, which I really appreciate. We're going to go to a break in just a minute. And we will be back in a couple of minutes. That's why I wanted to make sure we gave out that information. And we can have people call in. I want to give that number out now. It's 248-809-3474. 248-809-3474. Give us a call. Ask some questions. Let's have some fun. So we'll be back after the break here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. On Empower Radio. Stay with us.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her two-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
There's a place where a total stranger will give their blood to save your life. There's a place where someone you never knew will save your child from drowning. A place where people will give you food and shelter after a flood. There's a place where, when you need it most, someone will reach out their hand, put it across your shoulder and say, "Everything's going to be okay." That place is called America, where we look out for each other. And it's up to us to keep it that way. When you help the American Red Cross, you help America. Call 1-800-RED-CROSS or visit redcross.org today.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Fire at the Shed.
Gee, Johnny, this rope swing sure is swell.
Don't I know it.
Hey, it's Sassy!
I think she's trying to tell us something.
Mr. Gunderson? What about Mr. Gunderson? A fire? Mr. Gunderson's trapped?
Where, Sassy? Where?
What, Sassy? Now that you've got our attention, you'd like to take a moment to talk about shelter pets? Shelter pets in general are well-adjusted, healthy, and love being with people?
Sassy, we don't have time!
Pets often end up in shelters due to owner problems like divorce or allergies?
That's great, Sassy, but what about the fire?
There is no fire! You're just messing with our heads?
Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Lauren Wilson, having a wonderful conversation about spiritual healing and all the fairly strange stuff that we both experienced. Lauren, why don't you give us a little idea about how you got here? How did you wind up on this path? What was your, in quotation marks, training? You know, who ran across your path that became your teachers?
Well, I'll tell you what. From the time I was a little kid, I was the strange one. I was the one that almost magnetized people, and not from an egoic space, but more people would tell me their life story. From the time I was, you know, a young preteen, I'd have people come and just pour their hearts out to me. And I sort of thought, well, maybe I'm supposed to be a psychologist or something within that structure. And as I started to work more and come into my own spiritually, I started to realize that, okay, I saw spirits. I could talk to dead people when I was a very small child. You know, my mother would talk about stories about I would see people that weren't there. And you know, now that I'm actually doing this for a living, she understands that it wasn't just, you know, an imaginary friend scenario, that I actually did see and speak to spirits. I started working for a psychic in my early 20s. And then, you know, it kind of had an ebb and flow to it. I learned a lot of things. I learned how to connect with my own healing master, how to do intensive meditation and kind of explore the shamanic side of psychic work. I also started to work with personal alchemy. personal transformation through alchemical process, kind of taking traditional alchemy and understanding that the philosopher's stone is effectively your own higher truth, your higher soul. And, you know, as a concept, it's something that is always evolving. It's nothing that just sticks. As I got older and started to kind of come into that more spiritual aspect, and what that meant to me personally outside of traditional religious teaching, I started working with a woman named Faith Rinoli, and she was trained within the heart and home healing modality. So she incorporated a lot of geomancy energetic grid work, I really understood what earth acupuncture was, that, you know, that energetic lines control our world. I started to have my own experiences, both, you know, kind of dipping my own foot in the paranormal pool, as it were, and realizing very, very quickly that, once again, when you see them, they see you back. Yeah. I sort of got a reputation, as it were, on the other side. I had spirits who would actually seek me out. You know, you're the lady who can help us. You know, and to be able to live that truth and not question it, I think is a transition point for most light workers and anyone that works in the paranormal community, either as a psychic or a medium, understanding that it's very personal. There's never one definition of a psychic. I very rarely call myself a psychic, even though intuitively I have a lot of aspects of my work that are psychic in nature. But I think that being able to have a wonderful amount of resource around me and many teachers, both personal and professional, has been able to expand 20 plus years of training and very phenomenal experiences that, you know, as we were talking about before, people come to you and say, oh, you won't believe this happened to me. And, you know, it's one of those relative things where it's like, yes, I have sat down and had a conversation with a ghost, and a ghost wants to know, you know, how do I do what I do? Not even wondering why I do what I do, but wanting to know how I can help them. And right. It kind of picks up its own pace after that. So, you know, over the last, probably the last 5 or 6 years, have I been able to focus and been able to understand psychic protection, not only for people within the lightworker community, but just everyday living, I think, requires us to be in the body and active and conscious and being able to execute our own decisions without a lot of energetic influence that doesn't serve us ultimately. And ghosts have a tendency to follow a similar vibration level. So, you know, I always tell people, you get up in the morning and you stub your toe, and that sets a tone for you for the day. And you find yourself, you know, that kicking and stubbing your toe, that vibration level follows you in everything you do. You wind up spilling coffee on your fresh, clean shirt. You know, you lock your keys in your car. Something will happen, and it's based on that single point of vibration connection for you. Well, the same thing happens spiritually. If you don't set your ownership and your dominion over your body and your mind and your soul, you have a tendency to give up control over this body and this space. And I try to help people incorporate that. You know, if it's just something like, you know, I'll have someone phone and say, well, the lights are going on and off by themselves, or our plumbing's wacky, I know we have a ghost. I'm like, okay, well, yeah, you have a ghost. Why do you have a ghost? Well, I don't know. I don't know what I did to attract this. It's like, well, do you watch paranormal television? Yes, I love it. It's fantastic. I can't get enough of it. Like, okay, right. Well, you're setting a vibration level to attract that kind of attention to you. And so it's kind of like the clearing is one piece, and then there is a nurturing piece if they choose to do it, that I try to help people empower themselves to kind of take control over all of those aspects and say, you know, it's not really normal that you have a ghost. It's not really appropriate that you have a pet ghost in your house. And where there's one, there's many. It's kind of like, you know, having a mouse in your house or something like that. You know, where there's one, there's many.
Right.
It's cute right now, but, you know, in a few years, it won't be so cute.
Right. And that's one of the factors, especially in the paranormal investigator community, that really isn't looked at. The ones that are communicating are, to say it's the tip of the iceberg, it's way less than 10% of all the ghosts. Most ghosts don't know they're dead and are just lost and out there looking for something that feels good to attach themselves to, if they even have that experience of something external to themselves. So
go ahead.
So the number of ghosts and the effect of their energy on the people in a place that has a lot of ghosts can be very, very powerful. It can be thousands of them if it happens to be, you know, a battleground where something happened 1,000 years ago. And the house ghosts that are affecting those people are the ones that are connected enough to this time in space-time and interested enough and have figured it out enough to be interactive. But that's a really small percentage of everything that's going on that might be called a ghost.
Well, what I find really fascinating, and this is through my own experiences, there have been locations that I have been to, and, you know, obviously, when we see things on paranormal television, it's always a well-known haunted house. I could literally step outside into the back alley behind my house and find ghosts. So it's really quite a misunderstanding about spirit and how ghosts actually move in the world. And some of them have literally no business being in my alley. They didn't die in my alley, so why are they there? The thing is that like attracts like, vibration attracts vibration, and it will, just like someone moving to a city because there's lots of new jobs, ghosts will tend to congregate with other ghosts. And because of that common energetic, it never goes away. It's the same thing that attracts human beings to other groups of people. My husband and I honeymooned at the Stanley Hotel. I live in Colorado, so it's very accessible. It's nothing glamorous, trust me. But we decided to go up and honeymoon up there, and it's become quite popular because of the paranormal programming. They have this huge ghost tour now, and it's very commercialized. But what is very interesting is that we were up there several years ago, and there wasn't the population of ghosts that there is today. And some of them, as I say, had no business being there, other than the fact that they are now employed by the living to create this attraction. And it's really amazing to watch, because there are spirits who are there who are period spirits, you know, very popular, but they play a role. And I walked into our suite, and there was a little girl standing in the doorway, and she was a very well-known spirit. I won't say who she is, because a lot of people will be upset, because I actually had her cross over. She asked to go see her mother. This is her free will. She's choosing to go. And until that point, I don't think anyone had ever been available to her to actually help her move. And it's nothing. The compassionate spirit release is not a super secret handshake type of work. It should be part of your consciousness and your consciousness in a human body to execute compassionate spirit release. It should never be a question of ownership. And so I had her cross, and I'm just the vessel for that energy. I'm not doing it myself. I use angelic teams. There's so much more to it, and everybody has their own way of doing it, but she crossed over. Well, that really upset some of the other ghosts because she was a really big part of the star attraction. And so now she was gone. I actually got into trouble because later on that evening, I'm fast asleep, and I had a 17-year-old boy in my face, a ghost in my face, mm-hmm. saying, "We don't need that death door for happiness." And he's got his finger in my face, and he's yelling at me. And I had to sit up and explain, she asked to go. If you asked to go, I would help you too. And he was just completely appalled that I had the gall to let her go. So, you know, and
that's a really interesting perspective, because I have a different way of putting it about those attractions, because I consider, you know, ghosts are people. They may be confused. They may be lost. They may be making bad choices, but you know, they were doing that when they were alive, too. But the fact that they're being either attracted to or held in the place for profit means that they're slaves.
Right.
They're human beings that are there for the profit of somebody else. They're doing, you know, they're making money for somebody. And if it's possible for them to move on, which it totally is, and there are people like you and I that do this work all the time, and the people who are making money on it are not facilitating that. They're nothing but slave owners. And there's part of, when I go, and whether it's a cemetery or it's, you know, I'm like, don't ever invite me to those places. Because, you know, I will ruin your business because I have my responsibility, and when they show up, my immediate thing is going to be, do you understand the circumstances? Here's the portal of light. Here's the angels. Just go to the other side. They'll explain it to you. There's an intake process. Just go with the nice people, you know?
And it's not hard to do. Like I said, it's not a secret handshake.
No. And I've had the same experience of large groups of ghosts sending somebody as a front ghost. To me saying, we heard that you can help us. And the whole street cred thing not only works for ghosts, it also works for darker entities and demons and other things once you've done that work for a long time. And people say, you know, aren't you afraid of them? And I said, no, they're actually afraid of me.
They are. And speaking of the demonic side of it, yeah, some of them are very territorial. And I mean, I've been called out. I've been called out to other light workers. And they're like, oh, I know who you are. They mentioned you.
Right. And one of the things that I do is, you know, and you're familiar with this, but other people probably are not. Demons will present themselves in the way that they think is going to be the most fearful to you.
Right.
So they're doing their thing. And I just look at them and go, have you asked who I am? Which stops them dead because they don't expect anybody to ever do that. They figure you're going to be afraid of them. And so they stop and they look away the same way that we do when we're trying to get information or understand something. And they look back and just go, oh, I'm in trouble. And yeah, pretty much. And by then, my whole team is there. Yeah, you picked the wrong one. And that sounds, to people that don't do this work, sounds very crazy and very egotistical. But at some point, I realized it really saves a whole lot of time if you just accept you have a reputation.
It's true. And I think I must walk around with like a neon sign over my head, you know, and that's in the spirit world, that's kind of the thing anyway.
Right.
They've got your number.
Right. Exactly. You know, it's like, where can you go on vacation that won't be exhausting?
I've been forbidden to go to Rome. That's all I'm going to say. And I'm not allowed to go to New Orleans.
Right. There are all these places that I want to see. And it's like, is it worth? Well, it doesn't even have to be that. You know, part of it is being an empath. And my guess is that you're an empath as well.
Yes.
So that we're feeling the emotions and the thoughts and all kinds of stuff from everybody around. And you have to put up some kind of protection so that's not – and you also have to separate yourself from it and ask whether this emotion I'm feeling is mine or somebody else's. And I know people that feel that from the earth. There's an earthquake in Indonesia, and my friend Claudia feels it. I had another friend who would wake up totally in despair, and it was always when mothers and children were in some traumatic event somewhere in the world. We finally used to, I'd say, just go on CNN and look up where people are dying. And she'd go, right. Oh, earthquake in Indonesia. So there's that aspect to it. But, you know, you go to a stadium or a concert with 10,000 or 60,000 people, and they're all getting drunk and they're all acting out. And I'm like, no, I'm not going there. That's just too much crazy energy. Why would I do that? And then they attract all their entities that hang out with them.
I actually have a harder time at the shopping mall than I do at a concert. It's almost as though the white noise of the concert tends to cancel out the energetic. A smaller venue, I have a hard time with, but like the shopping mall, forget about it. I can't go.
Well, I don't go to shopping malls much, but my daughter loves them. And when I go, I typically find a quiet place and just sit down and you know, do an eyes open kind of meditation. And one of the things that happened was I discovered the elementals of the concrete structures. And they're in all the big concrete structures. There is this consciousness that are a lot like elves or any number of other elementals that are just part of this concrete construction and are kind of keeping it all together for everybody, but also observing and feeling all the energy. And that's a fascinating conversation. It's like being in the woods and tuning into the energy of the trees and animals and all the rest of it. There's that in structures. There's that in electronics. There's that in everything.
Isn't it interesting how they've adapted to our new paradigm where, you know, they don't have trees and babbling brooks anymore. They do have, you know, highways and big structures. So that is fascinating.
Well, and that's probably true of the big cathedrals, all the big monuments in the world. There are probably structural beings that are there that have watched everything that's happened and kept it all together for us. So I just, you know, it was one of those, my daughter's running around doing things and I'm sitting there talking to who? There's a whole other realm of the universe I didn't know about, and it's okay, and who else can I talk to about this? You know, fortunately, I have lots of people in my life that I can talk to about it. But, you know, the levels of reality and the things you can tune into and become allies with is both totally amazing and a real privilege to be conscious of it all. But there's so much more going on than most people have any idea about. Except in fairy tales. And the thing that gets me about movies about this stuff is they usually get it pretty close to right.
I do believe that a lot of our, you know, this is how the universe is getting those kinds of messages across, is through mass media and books and movies and television. And there is definite intention behind it, you know, giving people inspiration, as it were, and there is truth in that inspiration for sure.
Right. And they're frequently very strange movies, but the thing that you said several times, when you can see them, they can see you, is a major turning point in the movie Constantine, which is an amazing movie if you get to the underlying meaning, and if not, it's just a really strange movie. Same thing with the second Hellboy movie is all about trolls and the world of trolls. And I don't see them quite that way. You know, it was kind of a different culture than I experienced, but I find the ones that are lost, you know, because I'm not part of troll world. I'm cleaning up a mill building somewhere in Massachusetts and they're stuck there. But it was really close. It was really fascinating how close it was to what so many of us can see. There was the Christmas movie about elves, and there's one line that says, "I'm your worst nightmare. I'm an elf with attitude." To which my response was, "I've never met an elf that doesn't have attitude."
Doesn't have attitude. That's exactly right.
Just who they are. Someday when we have more time, I'll tell you the story of when I met elves for the first time. You talk to the trolls. Why are you? No, I'm like, wait a minute, guys. It's the first time I'm seeing you. I didn't even know that you were. What do you mean we weren't real? You know.
Exactly. We've always been real.
Right. So yeah, but this is my introduction. Get out of my face for a minute. I'm trying to help you here. You know, and that's part of the beauty of all this. When it's integrated into your life, is that it is just a conversation with a lot of aspects of reality that other people think don't exist, or if you think it exists, it makes you crazy, which is that old, very old paradigm that people still have to struggle with. And there's all this fascinating stuff going on.
there really is, and being able to understand it as part of your living truth. Yeah. You know, one of the things I always say is it's really not my job to convince you this is true. You'll either come to it by experience or memory, but understand that this is the realm that I'm working from, and it's legitimate. It's as legitimate as, right, as going to a job every day and, you know, punching a clock. You accept that as reality. Well, there are aspects of reality, and we are multidimensional beings. It's just a matter of accepting that and moving into those other dimensions. It's not right. Hard.
And there is that pesky history that's been recorded for 9,000 years of people saying all this stuff is real and you can do this stuff. And, you know, people kind of go, what are you talking about? I'm like, it's written down everywhere.
Go find a book.
Exactly. Or a tablet or something. It's everywhere. So this hour has gone very, very quickly, and we really must do this again.
Absolutely. Lots to talk about.
Lots and lots to talk about. Please give your contact information again.
You can find me at www.clearlightsolutions.com. Soul integration into the solution.
Fantastic. And I want to thank you again for being with us, Lauren. Let's figure out when we can chat offline and tell all our secret stories.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. If you would like to find out more about my work, you can look at househealing.com. Cleverly hiding on the contact tab, you'll find every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including a link that lets you go directly to my scheduling calendar and schedule a 20-minute conversation so we can talk about what's going on with you and how my work might be helpful to you. If you want to find the archives to the Farkas Files, you can go to thefarkasfiles.com. Isn't that clever? And that will take you directly to that page. You can also search on iTunes for Farkas Files and get all of the recordings that way as well. Next week's guest is going to be very special for me. It's Carrie Hanlon Churchill, and her healing work is about sexual trauma. And that's a difficult subject for a lot of people to talk about, but as you start getting into both what the effects are and how to heal it, it's a very, very important conversation. So I hope you'll join us. And as you go out into your experience in the world and whatever your graduation is this week, just remember, we really are on walkabout and there's way more going on than most people are paying attention to. So again, this is David Franklin Farkas here with the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. We'll see you next week on Thursday at 9 o'clock Eastern.